Hi and welcome to the Droner Crew podcast, where we talk all things drones. From news and reviews to business advice and regulations within the industry, join Lee Castledine and Andy B.
In this podcast, we'll be talking about CASA's new drone regulation report and what that means for you, China's drone swarm world record, and our night of experience. Enjoy.
G'day. Good morning.
Good morning,
Lee.
Andy, what a beautiful morning.
It is, mate. Winter is coming.
I live for winter in Brisbane.
Let's have a chat about something going on in the drone world. Back in the day, we used to say only in America, didn't we?
Yep.
Now it's sort of tending to be
only in China.
Only in China.
All right. So I've got something for you. Something just landed in my messenger box last night. It was actually happened a couple of weeks ago. That's how late I am on news. But a Chinese drone company has broken the Guinness World Record for the most drones flying simultaneously in a 13-minute flight involving, guess how many drones?
I did read it, but I didn't read that number. It's typical me. I'd say 500.
1,374 drones spread over a whole kilometer. Yeah, so they
over
did
a kilometer.
Yeah, and they beat the previous, which most people might have known this, over the Winter Olympics, they probably at South Korea, Intel flew 1,218. So they beat it by 156 drones.
Now, wow, that's good.
I don't know how that happens, but we'll put a link up on our Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, all the other things to show you. It's really, really awesome.
It's a pretty cool footage. They actually had it not long ago for their Labor Day celebrations too, and they had some rogue drones.
Well, that's what I was thinking. Like, how do you have to do a count?
Doesn't always work.
How do you do a count when they land? And you go,
who's that guy?
1,371, 1,372, 1,373.
Yeah, definitely the work experience kid gets that job, don't you think?
He's doing the clicker. Hey, guys, we're one short.
Do it again, mate. You got it wrong.
So that's pretty cool. We'll put a link up on our Facebook page. It is some pretty awesome footage. Love nothing more for that to come out into Australia.
Well, look, it's prime time for it. We're getting to the grand final. Even maybe could we see it at a State of Origin?
State of Origin?
An opening of the State of Origin.
Big Bash game, maybe?
Oh, definitely a Big Bash game. Can you sort that out for us, Lee?
Yeah,
what do you reckon, mate?
I'll just buy 1,374 P4s or Inspires.
Just charge it to the card. She'll be right, mate.
Yeah, we're going well, aren't
yeah.
we?
Yeah, no, it's good. All right, mate.
Yeah,
so
fun news, that one.
Yeah, so there's a lot going on in the world with drones, and let's think about something a little closer to home. Our mates at CASA have actually released a report for their recommendations for the future of drones in Australia.
The future of drones in Australia.
Which is really interesting. I guess this is a report. This is not like anything. This is just what they think might be right. What they're saying, look, this is what we should do. This is what we should follow. This isn't law. This isn't gone judge, jury, executioner now. So
it's a discussion paper.
It is a discussion paper.
I love these discussion papers.
What it's all about is getting the discussion up
between
people that have interests and, I guess, money involved.
self-interest, you could
self-interest
say.
Self-interest even within the drone industry. So I guess we could go over some of the key things of it, summaries of it.
The summary came from basically 900 submissions I'm reading here. CASA released a discussion paper last year on drone safety regulation and received 900 submissions. So this is a bit of a review and a bit of a report as to, you know, we've shortened it up because no one wants to read 900 submissions. They support RPA registration in Australia. That's probably the biggest one is point number one. They support RPA registration in Australia for drones weighing more than 250 grams. So what that basically means, most people, if you're talking drones, they know they're DJI products. Andy here, I don't know my weight of a DJI Spark or a Mavic, which are one of the smaller drones.
Well, yeah, definitely. But, you know, anything from a Mavic Air is 430 grams. So you get a Mavic Air, their recommendations is that you would register that.
So you just hop on a website probably built by CASA and you put in your serial number and you'll register. But does that happen at the moment? No?
No, it doesn't. Okay. There's no register. Except, no. I mean, we don't even register our serial sort of stuff. I mean, that's the part of the procedure for getting your REOC to a certain degree.
So this is,
but that we register as operators. We don't register the drones and stuff like that.
So this
that
is
as
for
such.
Any drone weighing over 250. It could be a kid,
definitely.
Bought for Christmas. It could be a 65-year-old, or it could be a middle-aged guy like yourself.
Anyone, a real estate agent that wants to use some of that to top up their skills. A park ranger that wants to use the drones for helping out with stuff. Any of that stuff, it's going to get registered.
Now, I think James, who works for Drone It here, and he was on one of our podcasts recently, he went to China. I do believe that there is a registration process in China for that as well. So
yes,
we're sort of having a look at a few laws and ways in which other countries are going about their drone regulations, and they probably just snatched that from China and said, hey, that looks good for Australia. So point number one. Another point here is developing a simple online course for recreational users, followed by a quiz. I've never been one for my multiple choice.
Who wants to be a millionaire?
I'm not great at that.
Lock
game.
It in, Eddie.
Lock it in. Can I phone a friend?
Well, sometimes it could be too late with a drone to phone a friend. Hey,
can I go 50-50? If you're going wrong. So there's a minimum pass mark on that one.
We've all done that drone quiz, and it was good. It's good. It's your simple basic rules.
Basic stuff.
It's basic rules.
It's nothing too.
But once you do the quiz, you can do what you want. if you're so inclined.
If you see, I wouldn't recommend dodgy. That. But like in the currently what happens is that it's up to the operator to go on the CASA website and have a look at the rules and regulations, or they get a little pamphlet from CASA, like a little yellow slip that whenever you buy a drone, they put into each DJI product. So now most people just throw instructions. You do, Andy, I do as well. So any paperwork that you see with a nice shiny toy, you tend to throw it out and just go, let's get this thing. So
I know boats. You know, I know boats, mate. I don't need any help.
Yeah, exactly. So this basically forces the operator or the person with the drone to actually take a quiz rather than have a look, take it upon themselves to look at a piece of paper, which they may or may not do. I kind of think it's really easy. Hey,
it's easy.
There's some basic rules. They're not going to try and trick you. They're not going to be these multiple choice exams like they get in university or high school where you get tricked. They play mind games with you.
I think at the most it would take you 2 minutes to do that.
2 minutes?
Yeah.
That easy?
Yeah, well, easy. Well,
yeah, it should be. It would be easy.
It should be easy. You should kind of know not to be 30 meters, not to be 5.5K.
And if you don't know, you just get on the website as you do the exam as well.
Yeah,
so
we all carry around computers with us these days.
Nothing
so
out of control.
So, what's the next point they were talking about was they're going to incorporate more of the geofencing. I think they're working more with the drone
manufacturers.
Thank you, drone manufacturers, namely DJI, who have the largest share of the market, and a few others to sort out this geofencing. Obviously, it's currently working around airports and such like that. But
I think restricted areas.
I think it's more of a case of like when they have special events, much like the Commonwealth Games, where they'd have like
lock areas down for certain events.
Yeah, exactly. You have temporary geofencing, so people who may not be privy, as with an event such as an international event such as the Commonwealth Games, old mate Pierre's come in from France. And he doesn't know much about the Australian rules, but he turns it on and, hey, how you going?
I might just fly my drone over this area.
Sacre bleu, or whatever. I'm not French, I'm probably part of my French. But so just for those instances, then definitely I think the increase of the transparency between CASA and drone manufacturers to sort out the geofencing.
I kind of like this rule because it takes, a lot of people that are traveling with drones these days, say, for example, my recent trip to Cambodia. Now, if they had a geofenced area around Angkor Wat, I would attempt to put my drone in the sky and it wouldn't have flown. So I thought, well, hang on a second, it's taken the emphasis off me. I can't fly in that area. Now, in Australia, around, I think it would be good to have this only in airports, restricted areas. And then if certified operators, such as Droner or any other of the many REOC holders out there who want to fly in that area, then it would be probably they would go to CASA and then give them some sort of restriction on that geofence so they can fly in there. Now, interesting you say this because they were toying with this DJI a couple of years ago. I actually went up to Longreach and Longreach Qantas gave us permission to fly around their planes that are sort of parked up there because obviously that's the birthplace of Qantas, and I got really excited. You know, you've got Longreach Airport there, got all the approvals, ready to go. We're going to fly around on sunset to these big jumbo 737s that are just parked there in the old school Qantas, one of the first planes ever, sort of commercial planes ever. Went to put my drone up. It was geofenced.
Lockdown.
That was the only big time. I couldn't get through, obviously. It was the only time that I've ever experienced this. It's never happened ever again. You know, we've flown in restricted airspace, given the approvals and all that stuff. So this is something that, watch this space. I think it's good, but only if they don't go restricted airspaces like, airports, major. I don't want them seeing – I'd hate for it to go around helipads or anything because all of a sudden
– Well, okay, what if they said they geofenced popular beaches, for example? Bondi, geofenced.
Nah, see, that's the thing. Where are you going to stop? You just geofence any populated area, then every city's populated.
Well, then even local councils then could apply we've got to geofence our councils.
Don't get the local councils on their dirty
and then,
on
if you want to ungeofence it, it's just this slight fee.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
What are you saying? That CASA and, local governments don't mind making a buck out of their... I don't know.
They could.
They probably will. But anyway, interesting space. We'll see. As I said, these are just recommendations.
Other recommendations are also for global efforts. So this is really good. That's super because they're saying they're looking out. They're not just Australia, guys. We are looking at what's happening around the world. Obviously, mostly, I guess, what's happening a lot in the airspace of Europe, North America and China. Good. Now, what's happening in America is really interesting at the moment. There's a lot happening for them in regards to they're registering their drone users. Everyone, they're getting heaps of people. Like, I think we went through, there's like 500,000 drones got sold in the United States up to date so far. There's like, that's a lot of drones. I mean, considering that there's a lot of people there, but still, that's a lot of drones. So they've had to really take the initiative and get involved with this. Like, we got to register drones. Now, another interesting thing that's coming out of that with them is NASA's getting involved and they're creating systems that will help monitor the airspace. So this is huge.
Ooh.
So we're talking it was a real interesting article. Basically, the airspaces are going to look like something out of Fifth Element or Back to the Future. Do you know what I mean? Like, this is what's going to happen,
right? This
is the
stuff that we've been talking about. Like, that they've had in the movies for 50 years basically...
Jetsons even. All of that.
It's basically roads in the sky.
Yeah.
Where you can't go outside of those roads because if we... the biggest concern, I suppose, for CASA or for any regulator is... If we can't drive on the roads with our feet on the with our wheels on the actual ground, then how are we going to go in the sky?
Man,
it's going to be chaos. So they're obviously we need someone like NASA to get on board and go, "Hey guys,
definitely
we've got a system here.
We've got a bit of experience
I would love
in
nothing
this situation
more to drop my boys off at school. Literally push them out of the car in the sky out of my drone with a parachute. They've got parachutes.
See you later,
and then just land. And there's my goodbye.
They should just drop down rope, Black Hawk.
That's
Black Hawk helicopter
idea,
down, mate. Get in there, boys. See you later.
Cool. How cool would they be?
That'd be cool. But I think that might be a few years off. This is, I think,
I want to do it tomorrow.
Okay, done. this is definitely geared more towards your Googles, your Amazons.
Yeah, let them take over.
Getting all their delivery drones in the sky, I think with a small amount of what would be transport drones. Initially, they got to go
first step.
Let's control the airspace with delivery drones because it's going to get to a point where these is delivery drones. But then, what I have seen some people are proposing. I think these guys are called DAV, and what they want to DAV DAV, and they want to use the blockchain. And they want to get the blockchain working. So we've got our drones, right? Yep. And when we're not using our drones, we drone it, for example, could have drones working as delivery drones when we're not using them for filming. This is a few years away, but that's an example. Mm. So they're thinking we're going to have to regulate the airspace for the big movers and shakers like a DHL, like Australia Post,
yeah,
and also the little guys that are going to be using their drones as well for on the side hustle autonomous work.
First things first, we need to get drones in the sky delivering packages before we can put people in, because if a package drops from the sky, that's okay, I suppose, if it doesn't run into anyone. But
not if it's your pizza on a Friday night for footy. Ouch.
Just turn it into a little carbonara then.
Yeah, it'll just be a mess. What a bummer.
But yeah, first things first, the delivery of packages via drones is the first step. And then after that, we can move on to people, maybe. What do you reckon?
Definitely. There's not going to be any that storm's coming. The boats rise with the tide.
Yeah, nice.
That's a JFK JFK quote right there for you.
Is it?
It is.
All right, we'll look that one up.
That is. It's a good one. I love it. I read it yesterday. I'm like, I've got to use that.
I'm going to use
that, man. I'm going to be all like, you know, zen, talk about that.
What else is going on? Any right, other recommendations?
So that's the CASA roadmap to integrate RPA into the airspace systems of Australia, which is really super exciting. And, you know, that's our bread and butter. And we're looking forward to seeing how that goes. So I guess, and so there is a bit of, I guess, people, I'd like to know, now this, I'm putting it out there to people in the interweb, what would be your concerns about drone registration? Because yeah. I noticed some people are like, no, I don't want drone registration. How dare you do that? So what do you think about that?
The drone population or the community are very passionate.
So there's at least nearly 6,000 remote pilots around Australia. We've got 800, nearly 900, we've got over 1,000 operators.
How many?
There's over 1,000 REOCs.
REOCs. So, yep. Okay, so REOC holders are basically people like companies like Droneit.
Like Droneit.
Who have businesses that register not only their operators but also their drones. So basically, like a Qantas or like a Jetstar, but on a much smaller scale. There's a lot of paperwork involved in dealing with CASA. So there's over 1,000 of them in Australia. There's nearly close to 6,000 remote pilots, the people who have gone through the full training, like the week-long training or the online training that we do. That's a lot of people.
And then there's about 50,000 drones out there, varying in sizes, but drones nonetheless. Mm. So, okay. What benefits do you get out of drone registration? These are the ones that I've seen. So all of a sudden you've got people that have, okay, so we're like, all right, there's so many drone operators. What can we do for those drone operators? So all of a sudden then we're, you can create sort of drone safe areas, much like the Brisbane Council done with drone parks, allowing people to fly their drones in places and safe to learn how to fly their drones in places that they're not going to get in trouble for.
Yep.
So there's a bonus there of knowing how many people have got drones and where these people are. Do you know what I mean? To create infrastructure in that regard. Second point of it, USA, their best part out of the drone registration is working with the AirMap. So
this is a good little piece of technology that we saw the other day, didn't we?
And yeah, we'll put up a link to this. So basically,
take me through this.
So we'll turn up and we'll go, all right, it's not just can we fly their app,
yeah,
but because I'm registered with, and we'll take in this case, I'm registered with CASA, that's cool. I've got my license, or even if I don't have my license, I'm still operating within the basic rules. Okay. Yep. And then so it's not just can I fly their app, basically it's like you get approval to fly there. On your phone, yeah. Real time.
That's pretty cool.
So someone comes up to you,
basically the regulators are saying yes, you can fly there. So if anyone comes up and asks, whether it's a local councillor or a police officer or whatever, hey, there's my app, there's my approval. Hey,
there's your approval.
Off you pop.
Yep. So that's really good. And
yeah, it's good.
That comes off the back of the government and the regulatory bodies going, let's register this.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden you've got these opportunities.
So that's a really good idea. I think if that's going to happen in Australia, obviously we've got a Can I Fly There app. The owners or the people who develop that app, I think it might be Drone Compiler, I'm not quite sure. They would have to talk to CASA. There would have to be some sort of integration. So I see that as being a good thing. Now, the thing about this whole register side of things is that they're basically doing it for control. CASA are doing it for control, mm-hmm. so they can, you know, basically have a look at all the drones out there. If there is a crash, then there is obviously a way in which you can try and find who the operator is.
Mm.
So now my question is, what is the actually incentive to register? So if you're an operator, or if you think, oh, I'm just going to fly my drone, I don't really want to register. And your drone, you know, drops from the sky and something happens to it, then you can easily just say, well, there's no way of tracking that owner. So what I'm saying is, what's the incentive to register? Do you know what I mean? If someone who's not really serious in the drone industry is just going to fly around or whatever, what's the incentive? And because if you do register and you crash, then they've got a way of tracking you. If you don't register and crash, you can hide.
Yeah, okay. So
what do you reckon about that one, Andy?
What I do reckon is, like, if you're crashing drones, then you should be held accountable for it, and we should know why that drone crashed.
True. But
okay, did it crash because of operator error where they were flying? Did it crash because of it was dodgy technology? So all of a sudden, you've got all these guys registered and you can see a program and a pattern happening if there's a certain amount of people having drones drop out of the sky that might be some some dodgy drone company that just came out of nowhere, out of somewhere, boom, all of a sudden we've got the evidence saying, well, these drones are dodgy. All right, let's ground that certain type of drone.
Agree totally with you that in that point, Andy. Mm-hmm. But I'm thinking of the cowboys out there, you know? And there are a lot of cowboys in every industry. And
okay.
The cowboys, why would the cowboys want to register? Because they don't want to be held accountable.
Well, that's so they're saying you have to register.
You have to. And if you don't, what happens?
Well, then you're operating outside of the circle. You're dodgy.
You dodge.
It's just like not registering your car to a certain degree.
Exactly.
Do you know what I mean?
Then we'll come to the point where it will be registration.
Okay.
Yeah.
There's another thing. Registering your drone might open up insurance for drones, might make the pathway for that a lot
reduce your policy, because if you are registering, you are saying that you have to be competent because you have read the rules, you've done a quiz.
Yes.
So it's saying that, hang on a sec, if I register, I am competent. So therefore, what you might find is insurance companies reducing policies or their insurance policies to make it more affordable for operators to fly.
Exactly right. And that, you know, that more insurance operators getting involved in it, therefore that market becomes competitive and prices drop for me and you.
Yep.
So that's a really good thing out of that. And let's look at it like, you know, the Can I Fly There app's being used by, you know, at least over 72,000 mm-hmm. sort of users in that. So there's obviously people aren't afraid. So if you're using the Can I Fly There app, that would be just as simple as doing, say, like this registration using an app saying logging a flight.
And also another good stat, we're throwing a lot of stats out there this morning, aren't we? We're Stat City.
Statastic.
I'm the stat man. practice that one. There's over 6,000 people who have registered their details to notify CASA of their intent to fly commercially. So what we're saying is when that rule came in last year, sub 2 kilograms, and they came out with a rule which I basically deregulated the market. You know, there was a lot of people up in arms saying, oh, this is going to wreck it. There's a lot of good people out there saying, hey, CASA, I am actually flying even though I don't have a license. So, you know, they're people out there doing the right thing. I just don't want all these rules and regulations to be made around the 1% of how do you say it?
Cowboys.
Yeah, we'll just say cowboys.
Renegades.
Rogues, that's the word. So I just don't want the rules and regs based around the rogues.
But that's how any rules or regulations are, man.
And look at this whole world we're living in.
Yeah, here. I mean, that's it. It's always a few that, and everyone has to pay for a few.
But because we're in a really new industry, those rules and regs in normal, you know, normal life happen because you know, the industry has been established, and then they change the rules accordingly. This one's a brand new industry, so they're saying, I don't want them to make based big rules around the few cowboys out there. That's just my little 2 cents worth. I'll give it to you. You can throw it right back in my face.
Oh yeah, I kind of have a few times yeah. here. So you'll take registered drones in Australia. What's your take on it?
I'm saying yes.
No,
but
cool.
with a caveat. There's a big disclaimer, a little hashtag.
The caveat.
Caveat.
Okay. Well, I believe in drone registration. I'm all for it. As long, obviously, and yeah, because it's not like it's drone registration. It's not like it's how do I say? You don't have to. It's not compulsory licensing. It's true. Registration. They're not saying everyone has to be licensed. Because yeah. that's totally different kettle of fish.
Yeah. I still don't understand that quote.
Oh, they used to put fish in kettles.
Yeah.
And,
really?
Yeah.
Okay.
I don't know.
Can we look that up, please? Because yeah, I don't understand kettle of fish.
Yeah.
Seriously.
It's all right. We'll suss it out.
Keep talking. So look, mate, I'm
all for the registration because I think that doing this then – you get numbers and then it gets more progressive. Then we start to get stuff like BVLOS, Beyond Visual Line of Sight, getting incorporated into CASA's stuff. Well, you got a point.
We are running out of time.
Yes.
We did. Good news is we just got a couple of months ago, we got our night rating as well as
kit. Night Rider.
Night Rating, which is great. Hello, I think Michael. Which is stock standard with all the REOC holders out there. Basically means you can fly at night within obviously the rules and regs.
Yeah, when you got to set up your procedures for this kind of stuff. That was the whole part of us getting it because we set up our
procedures.
So we
gave it a good run the other night.
Yeah, we did.
We chested out a couple of, and we've actually put a couple of nice pano shots up on our Instagram and Facebook page.
Yeah, check them out.
And we took our Mavic up, and we just wanted to check the camera specs on the Mavic. And we've also got an Inspire that we use, an X5R camera, which is obviously a lot more expensive.
Bigger sensor.
Sensor, dynamic range, you know, all the technical,
all that stuff.
Technical chat. But, yeah, really interesting to put it up at night to fly and find out what how the camera reacted at the night time. So,
yeah.
Yeah, we've got a few videos up and things like that. If you're following us, just check it out. And
if anyone else out there with some night ratings, we'd love to see your photos and videos as well. And it goes, I mean, and you can still get some late Arvo shots if you don't have a night rating.
Yeah.
It's 10 minutes past the last light.
Last light. Check it out, yeah. So you've got time.
I may correct that later on, but I believe it's that. So you still got a good window there with the golden hour.
But night rating is – night flying is becoming a bit more normal these days. It was sort of frowned upon because of and then CASA basically opened up for all the REOC holders out there to say, hey, that's a stock standard. If you're going to – make the effort to get your REOC holder. We're going to give you these instruments to make flying for your business a lot more, make it a lot more profitable, a lot more sort of open to avenues.
Possibilities
are endless. Mm-hmm. Anyway, I think that's about it. I thought I'd throw that in there. We've run out of time. We're trying to keep these short, but yeah. It's been great chatting to you, Andy.
Excellent, mate. Look,
good to be back, actually. I had a bit of a rest.
Yeah, you did.
It
is good to have Lee back. All right, we've got a whole bunch of jobs coming up soon. We can't wait to share our experiences of those with you. We've got some guests coming in very shortly too, and we'll talk more about that throughout our social media avenues. All right, Lee, might be time for another coffee.
Let's go.
Okay, have a good day. Have a good day out there, guys. Uroo.
See ya. You have just listened to another Drone It Group podcast, and we thank you so much for listening. Make sure to like and subscribe so you don't miss out on any of our upcoming chats, and make sure to join us on Facebook and Instagram.